3 hired authors, 100 plus college and university presidents, dozens of actionable insights for academic leaders. Commencement, the beginning of a new era in higher education, is now available on Amazon. Welcome back, everybody. It's your time to ed up on the EdUp Experience podcast, where we make education your business. Dr. Joe Seleucio back with you again as we continue to bring you the most amazing leaders in and around higher education to the microphone. Oh man, it's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun work to talk to these amazing individuals. Of course, we took the first 125 college presidents that we interviewed and put them into a book called Commencement, the Beginning of a New Era in Higher Education that Kate Colbert and I published and got out this past November of 2022. And we've sold thousands of copies and gotten this in the hands of higher ed leaders all across the globe. Thank you for supporting our work. We really appreciate you. And don't forget to give us a review on Amazon if you get time. I want to get right to the conversation today because I think it's an important one. I'm going to bring my guest here because we were talking before and she's got so much to say and nobody wants to hear me monologue. So here she is, ladies and gentlemen. She is Cheryl Delk-Lagood, Executive Director at English USA. Cheryl, what's going on?
Not much, Joe. Thank you. I should say not much. I'm going usually 10, 11 hours a day, especially on a Monday. So a lot going on.
Of course, we always want a level set for our audience. Cheryl, tell us what you do at English USA and how do you do it?
Sure. So English USA is a professional association of intensive English pathway and ESL support programs. So on paper, we're a trade association. To our member programs, we provide professional development support through a lot of webinars and such, several conferences throughout the year, one in person and one virtual. And then we also do some advocacy work with government agencies, notably the Department of Homeland Security, Department of Commerce, Department of State, Education. But we serve post-secondary programs and institutions, and we currently have 240 all across the United States.
Amazing.
That's incredible, Cheryl. How do you keep track of all of those things every single day? Obviously, working those 10 and 11 hour days, right?
Well, I have an amazing board. Haviva Parnes just joined here. She's the president this year, but we have a 12-member board, and each board member is assigned to a committee in an area that interests them as well. So professional development or membership engagement or advocacy. So really, we couldn't do it without them. I am the only full-time employee. The board obviously is all volunteer, but with their help and also assistance from an association management company, we get it done, and we offer quite a bit on a regular basis. So it does keep us busy.
Now, sometimes the EdUp Experience does amazing things, and this is one of those times. And for the audience, this is how this is happening right now in real time. So I want you to understand the full authenticity of this. So a colleague of mine, and you've heard him on the microphone before, his name is Dr. David Lind. He's the director of international admissions, I think, with the College of Professional Studies at Syracuse University. He calls me and he says, I've got Cheryl from English USA. I want to book her. She's amazing. Get her on. He says, I also want to co-host that episode. I say, David, absolutely. Don't worry. Well, David's not here and he's brought Haviva, who's on, and I want to have you come off of mute, Haviva, who is the president of English USA. And he did not even tell me you were going to be here, Haviva, but I am so glad you are here and that you popped on. And this is, we can just handle anything that comes at us. But welcome, Haviva. How are you?
Oh, my pleasure. sorry, I wasn't popped on right immediately. I had a little delay in my calendar there. But my name is Haviva Parnes. I'm the president of English USA. I am also the U.S. head of operations for EC English Language Centers. So as Cheryl mentioned, I'm currently sitting as the president, and the board does have 12 members and rotates. So originally I started actually way back when with English USA in 2015. I sat on the advocacy stream. The board has changed a little bit in its structure. But advocacy is kind of where my heart lies. And then eventually became president-elect, now president, and then I'll serve as past president next year. And so my role on the board is really sort of, I still sit in the advocacy stream for the board. So we do still, I do still help that committee and work with them very closely, but also broadly working with Cheryl, with the rest of the board to help us with our strategic plan and move forward and really be the best voice that we can be for English language programs.
Epic.
Oh, no, that's great. Let's talk a little bit about the strategic plan and the vision for English USA. You know, how is the board and you, Cheryl, how are you all thinking about English language programs, what the future looks like? And you know, anybody can start, but tell us what's going on with the strategic planning.
Sure. So, I mean, the broad idea here of our strategic plan, and each committee has very specific goals that play into the plan, but the broad goal is really to be the voice of English language programs and make sure that we're always striving towards really reaching all of our community and really helping on the ground with the issues that come up and the things that are important, that all of our stakeholders are involved in our decision-making process, and that we're really involving the community and the membership in what we do. So that includes things like making sure our stakeholders have a wide variety and really our representation and support the programs that we have. So we're talking everything from recruitment of programs, marketing of programs, advocacy for the programs, so that making sure that the right, you know, government bodies and associations, other people that we work with are supporting those programs, and making sure that we're really appealing to the membership that exists. You know, programs have changed a lot since English USA came into existence. If we want to just do the big highlighted one, you know, we'll talk about pathway programs exist now. Those didn't exist a long time ago. We'll talk about, you know, what does it mean to be an online program? How do juniors programs fall into all of this? I mean, there's such a wide swath, and then support programs. A lot of schools don't have an independent program that runs their language program, but they have a huge group of people who are supporting English language learning on their campus. So how does that work? What does that look like? And really making sure that we are touching all of those people and reaching out to them and supporting them in the best way that we can.
Cheryl, that's a lot. You know, you're a one person execution team, and the way it Haviva kind of laid it out, there's a lot there. There's a lot for you to execute on. Who and how are you pulling on resources to get the job done? Give us a little insight into how you execute that strategic plan.
Yes, but with a lot of support. Haviva talked about the diversity, and that's a lot of our members at events. You know, we did have our in-person event back in October for the first time post-COVID. When folks get together, either online or in person, we talk about the fact that the members are actually competitors. You know, they're going, you know, they're recruiting students, international students, obviously to different parts of the US. But it's, you know, we talk about the competitive collaboration of the members as a whole, and that's really is what makes English USA really strong. I used to serve on the board in early days back in 2005. We're getting close to our 35th anniversary, I think, of existence. But the change in the offerings, the ideas, you know, come from mutual collaborative efforts at committee meetings, obviously, but those ideas do need to be executed. It is very much a working board. So when some of the virtual events or the in-person events come to be, I rely very much on assistance, not just as subject matter experts and practitioners in the field as recruiters. Haviva mentioned that she is on the compliance side, the advocacy side. I know she enjoys that very much. So we appreciate her subject matter expertise, but really it's turnover with a board is the role of an executive director is fascinating. I've been doing it for 7 years. The board rotates 4 people per year. It's a little scary, actually, because I know many of the people, but as you know, you don't know them in a working relationship. So the rotation of the ideas and the commitment to fulfilling what is that strategic plan, and as Haviva mentioned, to be the voice, to be more visible internationally. This may come up later, but English USA obviously is the association in the United States. Our peers, definitely competitive peers, are English UK, English Australia, Languages Canada, Marketing English in Ireland. So we do, I learn about advocacy efforts, which are quite different, obviously based on our governments, but also it's a community, not just in the US, but worldwide.
Well, that's interesting. Can we talk a little bit about what English language programs are? I mean, besides the obvious, you know, how do you put one together? How does it work? How do you execute on it? Are there approvals you need to get? Who do you need to partner with? What's the oversight look like? There's a lot of questions around the how. I think there's probably a pretty good understanding of the what, but give us some insight into the how. How does all of this come together so that an entity can execute an English language program?
So the 240 members, and they're estimated likely over 500 English language programs in the U.S., we support post-secondary programs, but many of those programs also have junior type offerings and things like that. But our members are located, you mentioned the word standalone, that's a word that we use, either standalone in larger metropolitan areas or even smaller cities, at universities, colleges, and also community colleges. That's a, it's still a small contingency, but it's one that's growing with English USA. And then we also have multi-sites, and a lot of these multi-sites have sites also in other countries as well. Haviva will speak to that, but it's ESL offerings. It's can be both professional courses, academic courses. Generally, when a student comes to the US to study English only, they have to be full-time, so 18 hours per week studying. It usually includes cultural activities and things like that too, but those are full-time students, but there are also part-time students, refugee immigrants, etc. But a lot college, universities, community colleges, standalone, multi-sites, and Haviva can describe that large contingency of our membership too.
We used to be called, you know, we used to classify ourselves as support for intensive English language programs. And that word intensive sort of became very muddled and not really inclusive of everybody that we are at this point. And so as Cheryl's describing all these different kinds of programs, where they sit, where they, you know, how they're structured, whether they're on a college campus or they're independent, whether they're helping refugees and community people, or they're reaching out to a global community, or they're on a college campus and supporting international students on the college campus, there is this wide swath. And so English language programs, it's quite a loaded question, right? Like, who are English language programs? Well, we're still figuring that out. We're still adding things to our list. We're still trying to really find the whole community. And I think the community is evolving and changing over time. And we are English language programs because program is a bigger word that can encompass more of the people out there who are working in this field.
A really interesting part of this for colleges and universities is that ESL programs, English language programs, really represent a enrollment pipeline, right? These are students that ideally master the English language and then think about leveraging that to a college or university. So colleges and universities really invested, some of them are anyway, in English language programs. Can you talk about how that works? Do these partnerships with universities evolve? Do they start these programs? Do they reach out to you for advice? Just give us an idea of how these things come to be on a college campus.
Sure. you know, it would be great if you could just pop open a program and start supporting your students. We'd love that. But it does get a little bit more complicated than that. And I think English USA is a great support network for programs coming into the field, and especially evolving and changing programs, right? We have a lot of established programs that have changed over time and had to figure out how they're going to work. I think if you're, you know, on a college campus, or you are an independent person looking to start a program, the first place you are going to, the first resource that is great for you is English USA, and networking and working with other English language programs to help sort of figure out what it is that you're looking for, what need you're going to suffice in your community. And then the next step of that is actually, you know, establishing yourself in terms of accreditation, licensing, if that's something that's necessary. And then as well, you know, your actual ability, you know, Department of Homeland Security, your ability to issue visas, if that's something that you're going to be doing. Now, if you're on a college campus, the resources are generally a little bit more in-house for you. And there's some typically some kind of strategic plan that you're falling into. So whether you're falling into a plan to increase international students on your campus, and then you're setting up your own individual program, or you're coming sort of more organically from a place where you have international students and professors and the community are saying, we need to support these people more, they need better language skills, we need to work that out. So very organically, sometimes these support positions start to evolve and become their own department. And it can be a recruitment mechanism to say, hey, instead of bringing these people in and then having to support them after, why don't we set up an English language program where they can come in, we can support them. Maybe they don't have the level of English that they need to start at an undergrad level yet, or a graduate school program yet, but we can build them up and we can do that in-house. Or we could partner with another institution that already does that. So for example, I'll use EC, my organization, as an example. We partner with many universities that don't have language programs and are recruiting overseas, but find a lot of students just aren't quite ready yet. So maybe they'll come to one of our programs and build up their level and then transfer into the university eventually. So English USA becomes a great resource for jumping into that pool to sort of decide what do you need, looking at all of the different programs that exist, speaking to people. You know, as Cheryl mentioned, we are all competitors, but I think we all understand and support. We all know that all of us being successful is the best thing that can happen for English language programs in the U.S. and is the best thing that can happen for international students. So there is a lot of support out there. Am I going to hand over my, you know, budget and P&L to you? Probably not. But am I happy to have a conversation with you about, you know, what the market looks like, what some of the challenges are in the industry, why having the support of Department of Homeland Security and being able to issue visas, why that's important, what different accreditors are out there, and why you might choose one over another. Those are all conversations that as a community we're happy to have with each other. And it's not an easy road. I give so much credit to everybody who's interested in jumping into the pool, because there's a lot of challenges, but there's a lot of reward to be had also.
I was thinking when you use the term jumping into the pool or jumping into it, you know, that's something English USA was a leader, you know, back in the early 2000s to ensure to move to the path towards legislation that led to accreditation. So we actually wouldn't want anybody to just pop open an English language program without meeting standards. And at this, you know, starting in 2013, every single, you know, all programs had to be accredited. So I think, you know, the support system, I mean, I'm going to toot my own horn throughout this whole session, but providing the support certainly does help the diverse, you know, institutions that are out there. And we're changing constantly, just constantly. So we got to keep up with that.
Why does this hit so close to home for you guys? You know, why do you do this work, Cheryl, of serving these students and the advocacy and the 10, 12, 14-hour days that you talk about to bring English to students, and knowing that, you know, there's so many positive consequences, but it's very hard work to get there. But this is passion work. Can you talk about what drives you all to this work and why it's so important to you?
Well, I think, and I do come from the field, by the way. I was a director of an English language program at a university, and I taught in another one for many years. So, I mean, getting into it, I think we could go and make phone calls to 10 people right now, and they would say, obviously, that the students are number one. And Joe, you alluded to that as well. I mean, the students and their well-being and success are why we all got into it. You know, at the administration level that Habiba's at, that I've been at now in this role, it's also the soft diplomacy piece when it comes to bringing in international students from all over the world. I mean, it's a very competitive time right now with students staying closer to home to study English, if not at home studying English, but certainly proximity-wise closer to home, Australia, UK, et cetera. But there's a diplomacy, like I said, a soft diplomacy cultural issue where, you know, we welcome with open arms these international students to study English and then to pursue whatever goal they have after that, which may mean to seek a degree in the United States, either undergrad, grad, or seek a professional certificate, or return home and seek a better job opportunity that they will have speaking English. So there's definitely a love for cultures and a love of languages in addition to English, and internationally being open to the world.
Oh, it's so interesting. I mean, I think if you ask anybody who does this kind of stuff, you'll find that they have some sort of international experience of their own that sort of tugs at their heartstrings a little bit. And I think for me, you know, studying abroad and travel has always been living abroad, travel has always been a very important part of my life. And I know how much I have gained personally from those experiences, and to be able to provide that to other people is so important to me. And I also think we need to recognize that that's an incredible privilege to be able to travel and see the world, and bringing people here to have that experience not just helps them grow and understand us a little bit better, but it also helps the people here grow and understand the world a little bit better, which is, I think, something we all could use a good dose of. And it's just an incredibly rewarding experience. And it just, the globalization of our world, we look at how much comes through, how much people have access to these days. I mean, it used to be that all the foreign countries, if you didn't travel and you didn't go out and experience it yourself, you really had no idea what was happening anywhere else in the world. But now we're constantly being bombarded by so much information, and it is hard to know what is it really like, what is the reality of that, what relationships can we have as a world, and helping facilitate that is the incredibly rewarding experience, and allows for that openness that I think is super important to everything that we do. So there's a lot of passion, I think, if you speak to anybody who does this, and, you know, working 10, 12 hour days, you know, doing a full-time job and volunteering on a board and doing all that stuff, that comes from a love of the experience from ourselves.
100%.
You know, I want to just jump back in time, and we've done this dance before, talking about COVID, how it affected an institution. We beat the dead horse. We know we're coming out of it now. Hopefully, return to whatever normal you decide you want to return to. But we haven't really ever taken the angle of how this how COVID disrupted English language learning programs. You know, what for those that were trying to command and increase their knowledge of the English language and they didn't attend the programs, or I'm assuming they didn't attend programs, what did that do? How did it set people back? Can you talk about COVID's effect to English language programs and are there long-term effects? Are they all short-term? Just giving us an idea of how it affected the industry.
I mean, the industry was heavily impacted. It's economically, to send your child overseas to study English is an expensive adventure anyway, when the borders were closed. I mean, that's a moot point. But what it did on the positive side, and it's become quite cliche, but yes, I don't like to use the pivot word anymore, because I pivot to me implies a turn one way, and it didn't turn. You know, we've done a complete rethinking of what to offer students, what students have told us. Now they're not just students, prospective students, clients in the business world. They're sharing more opinions of what they want. It's become more, the offerings have had to become more diverse. I mean, to simply say online, I mean, there are options now that will probably never go away. And if someone had said 5 years ago, why don't you test students online before they come? Because then they'll know exactly where they are in the levels, and it's, or why don't they do the orientation online? And then, you know, things that we would, you know, 3-4 years ago would have said, oh no, you know, that 100% immersive in-person experience. But it's changed us all for the better. As an association, we are offering offerings, activities, webinars and informal meetups, book clubs, etc. We're offering things now. Again, 3-4 years ago, if someone had said, Cheryl, you're going to be coordinating and planning, you know, 12 to 15 events a year, I thought that, you know, I would have thought that would be insane, but it's not at all. And we've grown for the better, for sure.
It's changed a lot. I mean, I think Cheryl alluded to it, but a while ago, not so long ago, I would even say 5 years ago, if you told people that there would be any component of that was online for a program, they would just tell you no. Like, that's just not what we do. We are immersive. We are, you know, we want people to come here. And I think we still want that. But now we know that students can do some studying online before they arrive. And maybe that helps your program in terms of the numbers that you have and the levels that you're able to offer. We know that people can, you know, combine this immersive experience. We know that we can bring technology into the classroom. We don't have to rely on Xerox and copy machines, and there's a lot more resources out there for people. Cheryl mentioned testing online. We can also get feedback from our students online, which is really lovely. We can do a lot of professional development online. As an organization, you know, professional development is always difficult to come by and expensive. And English USA provides, as Cheryl said, these webinars. You know, we have 15 events, and a lot of them are online, and a lot of them provide you the opportunity to reach out to a community that you never had access to before, that you had to pay big bucks to meet in person. So I think it's really widened our horizons for the best. And it's, you know, it's always going to be tricky, and change is always a little bit hard. But I do think being thrust into it and making it work is something that also English language programs are very used to, right? We're a very volatile, a very volatile world, and we depend on other economies and other markets and other political situations for our success. And so we are constantly moving and changing. And this was just another one of those moves and changes that we were able to make. And I think we've been able to find a lot of bright spots for that.
That's what we do in higher education. We change and we pivot. And if we're not changing and pivoting, we certainly need to start. And one way we're going to do that today here on the EdUp Experience podcast is I'm going to allow my late guest co-host, Dr. David Lind of Syracuse University, to pop in and ask a question before we wrap up this episode. David, welcome to the party, and get that question in before it's too late.
Okay, so here it is. It's the EdUp Experience question that I've been asking all the guests. Cheryl and Haviva, if you could borrow a piece of technology from the future for a day, you know, like Back to the Future, and use it to solve some kind of nagging problem that you have with education, you as leaders in this space, what would that technology be, and what problem would it help you solve?
Okay, well, I'll say, sorry, Cheryl, I don't know if this is, I don't know what you're going to say here, but I will say it's not a specific piece of technology, because we don't know what that's going to be. The future is still unknown. But I would say something that provides us with data and information about what the trends and what's happened, and a really we are able to like zap everybody's brains and know where every English language student is, where they are going and where they went. I would really love that information. And I think it would be incredibly useful. One of the biggest challenges we have now, as you're very familiar with, is the collection of data and the understanding of who our students are, who our programs are, who everybody is. So if there was some great piece of technology that could give me all of that information, I think that would be extremely useful for me.
I'm going to take a different route. And I think I would seek out some sort of technology that would eradicate disease and pandemic and the biological pieces that prevent people from doing the things that they want to do. The pandemic had such an impact obviously on the whole world, and it would be great to know perhaps that will not happen again.
This has been such an incredible and enlightening episode. And as we do here always on the EdUp Experience podcast, is we like to give you the final two questions to answer before we end the episode. Number one, what did we not say about English USA that needs to be said? What open mic, talk about anything going on, the people, the partners, anything at all that you want to say. And two, tell us what you see for the future of higher education related to English language programs.
What I'd like to say about English USA is in the field, general field of international education, which is huge, right? Undergrad, grad, English language study, professional study, et cetera. You said it, Joe, at the beginning that that a student coming to study English can have such an impact on a person's life, and to us it can be this. It is a path to many other success stories or many other paths in life. And for those of us who have studied language in another country, as I have, so many of us have, it's life-changing. So I think what I'd like to say about English USA that we didn't say is that we play such an important role in, and I won't even say the beginning of that path, because students often get to that crossroads, right, from other paths in their life. But I do feel that we do have an impact. And as far as the future of education, you mentioned AI. You know, we're going to be incorporating technologies in, obviously we've been doing that since the beginning of time, and we will continue doing that from this point forward. Will it include a more prevalent AI presence in English language study or international education? You betcha, but in what format, we'll wait to see. But technology is certainly going to play a role.
We've touched on it, but haven't talked about a lot is sort of this professional, the two areas that I think contribute very heavily into why English USA is a great support network, and that is professional development and advocacy. And so those two areas, I think, are really difficult for programs to manage. And it's the student services part and the, learning the teaching the language and stuff like that. I think people that passion and they have it and they want to do that, but how you grow that and how you keep that relevant and keep yourself, keep your business in business, is a really hard piece for people to provide on their own. And so that professional development, having access to the network of all of the language schools and being able to use English USA as a resource for, we're doing DSO training for SEVP, we're doing all kinds of talking about technology and AI and online learning and lots of resources for everyone across the board in your organization, whether it's, on the recruitment side or on the academic side or anything in between. So I think that having English USA for that and as a resource is incredibly important. And part of that for me is always going to be advocacy, having a voice, being able to stand up and have all these institutions behind you that are saying, yes, this is something that's important to all of us. And we want to make sure that the right people hear that message. And English USA provides that for its members. So I think that that's really important. The future, I think it's going to be interesting. I don't think it's the kind of thing people say, oh, people just aren't going to do this anymore. You're going to have technology. You're not going to need it. I don't think that that's the case. I think this cultural immersion is always going to be something that's important to people. And I think we're always going to have that as an aspect. I think the internationalization of college campuses is only going to continue to grow and only going to continue to need those people in our workforces as well, especially as technology grows and changes and the different skills that come from around the world. So I think that all of that will continue to be important, but I do think it is going to shift and change. And I think we have to be flexible about what that looks like and how technology will play a part of that and how we can better use all of those resources to help build better English language programs and communities for our students. I think that's the direction that we're heading down. And I think it's pretty exciting. I think there have been a lot of years where we were all sweating a little bit and wondering what was going to be next and maybe not, maybe a little worried about it, but I feel very optimistic and I see the numbers in our schools growing and I see the programs doing just absolutely incredible, amazing things and the success that that brings to our students and our teams on the ground. So I'm pretty excited about what's to come.
Well, this has been an incredible episode and I have to outro my guest co-host first. He may be late, but he's always here. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Dr. David Lind from the CUSE.
I will be groveling to you after this call. Yeah, forgiveness. I did want to say that one of the themes on this podcast is you interview people in continuing education. And one of the themes there is taking a chance on people. And I think Cheryl and Haviva represent an organization that takes a chance on thousands and thousands of people who are looking for an opportunity in this country. And that opportunity is provided thanks to this network of English language programs that exist. And they would not exist, you know, without people like Cheryl and Haviva. So thank you both for coming on today.
Well, there you have it. My amazing guest today, and I mean amazing, we have Cheryl Delk-Lagood. She is Executive Director at English USA. Cheryl, we hope you had a good time in this podcast. And of course, Haviva Parn, she's President at English USA. Amazing women doing amazing work in our industry. Ladies and gentlemen, you've just head upped. It's time to
level up.
The beginning of a new era in higher education begins with you. Order your copy of Commencement. The Beginning of a New Era in Higher Education by Kate Colbert, Dr. Joseph Lustio, with contributions by Elvin Freitas. It's higher education's must-read book of 2022. Discover how you can seize the moment to change higher education forever. Commencement, The Beginning of a New Era in Higher Education, now available on Amazon. For bulk orders, contact Kate, Joe, or Elvin